Pour something flammable into your glass. It's JD Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm drinking scotch, enjoying left of my my weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, ugh.
I was going to say, has your weekend been all tornado watches and warnings like mine?
No, actually, our weekend has been pretty nice for the most part, but in general, we've been watching the news for Calgary. It's been entertaining. I'm just like, it's sunny here. It's really nice. But as it goes, that will eventually blow our way.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the thing with, like, tornadoes. It's just like, it is really nice. Then it looks like Mordor because it just like the sky turns so black that it's like, holy shit, is it night? And then the winds start picking up and you're like, well then.
Yeah.
Life is exciting. And my daughter, who has an irrational fear of pretty much everything, like a week earlier, we told her what a tornado was and she was like, so if a tornado comes, everyone's just dead, right? And we're like, well, no. And so once the tornado warnings were in effect and, like, actually touching down around the city, we're just like, okay, we can't tell her anything. we absolutely cannot tell her anything.
Oh, no, my daughter's exactly the same, but for her it's floods now, where she's just like, anytime it starts raining, she comes over to me, she's like, Dad, it's raining outside. I'm like, yeah, probably. And then she goes, but not enough to flood, right? And I'm like, yeah. It's not even close. She's like, not even close. I'm like, yep. She's like, it would take lots of days of rain. I'm like, exactly. We're fine. But it happens every time it rains now. It's fucking funny. God damn it, fucking kids.
Right?
All right, you're listening to Jaded Gamercast. Let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. So I didn't do anything, like, hobby-wise. Because myself, Maddie, and Jason all picked up boxes of the new Dice Masters release. So we've basically just been playing Dice Masters for like the last week. That's about it. I haven't really done anything else, unfortunately. I have to finish up the last chapter of the Game of Thrones video game, but I'm not actually, I don't know. It's been a very interesting ride, let's just say that. It doesn't quite have the punch as the Walking Dead games or The Wolf Among Us did. It's kind of so far. And mostly, like, because it's Game of Thrones and because I'm not enjoying it, I'm just getting really vindictive to, like, all the characters. Like, I just start making everyone else's life shit. And they're like, one guy's like, don't shoot her. And I just, like, put an arrow crossbow bolt in her back. And he's like, why would you do that? I'm just like, this game sucks. That's why.
So, oh my god, you're playing as Joffrey Baratheon. That's incredible.
I went a little Joffrey a couple of times, but in general, it's only when people mouth off to me and then I make their lives a living hell. But, you know. I haven't gone Shame None levels yet. But in general, you know, it's been pretty good. So I also finished, I finished up to Betrayer. In the Horus Heresy. I can't remember what the last one was. Angel Exterminatus, that's what it was.
I did enjoy Angel Exterminatus.
I thought Angel Exterminatus was interesting. It was slow, like it took a long time for me to get into it, and then during the climax of the book, I had a hard time kind of following what was happening, and it was almost like Graham McNeil falling back into his old ways of like, everything's gigantic, everything is numerous, so the scale of stuff gets kind of lost. But in general, I think it was pretty entertaining, and I did kind of like the way the story went, but it was just too many characters, too many stories, you know what I mean? Like, the Iron Hands disappear for like four chapters at one point, and you're just like, oh, hey, there they are, they're back. Hey,
right.
That's it, right? But other than that, it was pretty interesting. So, I mean, it was a good book. I enjoyed it. But now, I did ponder rereading, the one I literally just said 2 minutes ago.
Betrayer.
Yeah, that's one. I was thinking Berserker. I'm like, that's not right. I mean, it's close.
Yeah, you know, Betrayer is one of those books where whenever there's like a real lull for me, I'll go and I'll just start reading it. And it's, you can pick it up, you can put it down. Like, you know, I think I read through half of it and I was like, I forgot how fucking good this was. And then a new book came out and I just put it down, left it, went off on my own way. But I feel like that's the strength of Betrayer is like, you've read it once, you know the gist of what's going on. So then you just jump in and you're surprised at how good it is again.
Get into that meat.
Right.
Yeah. So, but I was thinking to myself like, nah, if I go through and I reread Betrayer, like I generally remember what happened. So.
As I said, I'm on my third read through of all the God's Ghosts up to Armor of Contempt, and I'm
that's
not
your jam, though.
To
that's
the
not my
fucking
jam.
End of it.
I reread things very rarely. I've read the Eisenhorn series twice, and I started rereading the Ravener series, but no, I never finished it. I haven't gone back to a lot of those books. Besides, I got to keep grinding.
Give me them flex.
Yeah, I got to get up to current. So. But no, I mean, Angel Exterminatus is pretty good. I think everything just pales in comparison to No Fear. No Fear. Just because that one's so fucking mind-blowingly good. So.
Well, that's because, like, you know, I think the reason why No Fear is so good is, I mean, Dan Abnett's style can literally be described as the slow burn. I mean, he's like the Guy Ritchie of authors, where you're just like, I don't know where you're going with this. I don't know where you're going with this. And as soon as it clicks and he hits that final, you know, that kind of like action moment,
yeah,
the book never drops off for you. And like that was my problem with his Space Wolves one, was the fact that it's just like that first 100 pages was just so fucking slow building it up, but then it turned on and the last like 200 pages were fucking mind-bogglingly good. No Fear had like 10 pages of like, what's going on, look, we're mustering, calf, and then it's just like, by the way, everyone's gonna die starting now, and you're like, whoa. And I think that's why it's so good, is it kind of breaks Dan Abnett's typical mold for how he writes books. And I guess Lang walked away. Or my internet died.
Oh, my mic got unplugged.
Oh, there we go.
I was like, yeah, yeah. No, that's great. Oh, totally, yeah. I'm on Mark of Kalth now.
Mark of Kalth is enjoyable because you do get some stories from everyone. And I mean, it's a right. Compilation. It's an anthology. So, yay.
Hooray. Although I will say that Betrayer does make a lot more... Not necessarily a lot more sense, but a lot of the things that happen in Betrayer carry quite a bit more weight than they did when I first read it, because I'd read it before I'd read, like, let's say 95% of the Horus Heresy right. books I've read so far.
Well, I mean, can we talk about how in Betrayer, them destroying Armatura, the fucking ultramarine, like, war world,
yeah,
at the same time that Kalth is being burned, and you're just like, holy shit, they were just hammering the ultramarines.
And then Ultramarines come back and hammer them, which
that's
is good.
Right.
It's good times. All right, so what about you?
An Ultramarine, make sure he's dead. Finished off some solos for my Signar Force. Finished painting up my three Stormsmith Stormcallers, and then I stripped some heavy jacks, getting them ready for painting up this week. So with any luck, I can get some more jacks cranked out.
Right on. All right, so... we are going to be talking about the Dark Angels Codex release coming up soon here, so get ready for just that whirlwind of excitement. But before that, let's go on to the model of the week, and then we'll do weekly listener poll.
All right.
So the model of the week is the Stormcast Eternal Judicators.
Okay, first, full disclosure, I did not want to do a third week in a row of
no, we were both particularly dumb.
And then, yeah, and I was like, no, no, we could skip them. They're archers. And then I saw a pose where the one of them had a bazooka. And I was just like, this is too stupid to
forget. I believe that is a cross bazooka.
It is a cross bazooka. Yes, you're absolutely correct.
What I think is so funny about these, because you've got the Stormcast Eternal Judicators. So I'm just like, so are they... Like, did they have to be judges for, like, there's no retirement? Is that why they're eternal judges? Ha ha ha, funds. But no, the whole idea of bows and arrows within this theme just makes me giggle, because it just, they look so pathetic compared to the, what is obviously Space Marines.
Well, and that was the first thing, is I was like, why the fuck is a Space Marine using a bow? And then I had to remember that this isn't 40K, and this is supposedly, quote, air quote, fantasy. And that's when I was like, oh yeah, I guess they might need bows, but they're fucking space marines.
Yep.
Like,
I also particularly like that there are two pre-orders available through Games Workshop's website. One is the Stormcast Eternal Judicators, and the other one is the Skybolt Hailstorm.
Which is just two boxes of...
Which is simply two boxes of Eternal Judicators.
For the price of two
of exactly
boxes
the same.
Of Eternal Judicators.
Let's name it something different, but hey, it's just two of those boxes.
Hooray.
All right, so you've got the bows and arrows. They look fucking stupid, and I mean, they just look goofy in the hands of these space marines. So let's talk about the crossbow. We'll act like the crossbow is the thing that everyone will
now,
take.
Now, are we talking about like regular crossbows or the crossbow zooka?
We'll talk about the crossbow zooka in a second, but let's just talk about the crossbows.
Got it.
So these crossbows are fucking enormous.
Yes.
They are huge. They're kind of what you would expect for like a guy carrying a bolter with a shit on little big, like a bow on the front,
mm-hmm.
and then like a funny stock on the back. That's basically what it is. Like, in terms of the size, this is what you're getting. In general, these look much better than the bows and arrows
on these guys,
at least the size fits.
Yeah, I was gonna say, the crossbows are definitely fucking gigantic. Like, they're enormous, they're oversized, but you have to remember that in the hands of space marines, everything looks small. So, that size isn't going against them. Yeah, you're definitely, from a purely aesthetic version, going with the crossbows, because this build actually doesn't make them look retarded, because this is the first time we are talking about the Stormcast faction where they have understated armor, where it's basically just your generic marine armor, you know, like head to toe. Sure, they have lion pauldrons, they can't all be winners.
The sergeants, come on.
Okay, the sergeant has a lion pauldron. But otherwise, they're okay. They're fine. Like I said, the bows just absolutely do not work. They look ridiculous in the hands of a space marine. But then the king of ridiculous comes, Crossbow Zooka.
So what I get a kick about this thing is that we've got some sort of cocking mechanism on the other side that he's going to be holding while doing it, while he's shooting his thing. Mm-hmm. And then what we have is this design that basically says, like, yeah, just jam your fucking fist in the back of this thing and go.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, so who's loading it?
I don't know.
Let's assume he has, because there's
no magazine. It's not gravity fed. It's not magazine fed.
Well, he has some sort of magazine on his butt if you go to the 360.
Holy shit, you're right.
I don't know what that is.
Maybe he's only allowed to fire twice per game. Perhaps. Like, he comes with it preloaded, and then he's got... His ass armor is just the second round.
So the proportions on this model are comic. The legs look fucking enormous. They look even bigger than normal legs. Now, that just might be the 360 view, but, I mean, what can we say that we haven't already said about these fucking models?
Right? No,
nothing.
I mean, really, we can't. This is, again, not being the fact that these are non-character models, they're not... fucking fetishized out the yin yang, which I guess is good, but they're still just fucking Blood Angel Sanguinary Guard with Art Deco helmets and no backpacks.
That's right.
This is literally the aesthetic. So
it's very, very similar.
Yeah. No, my God, I hate that crossbow zooka. It is just so
it's super goofy, man.
Oh my God, it's so bad.
I love how their arrows don't even have like feathers on them.
Right.
They're just like spears that they're shooting out of a bow and arrow. And it's like, so how do you notch it? Oh, well, you kind of don't, because there's not actually a place for you to notch it on this design, but hey, whatever. I'm sure there's some magical means by which this stupid fucking thing fires, but I don't care enough to know right now. So moving on to the weekly listener poll. The question that we asked you guys is, dryads, are they worth it? 55% of you
took so long to get to.
55% of you said fuck yes, and then the rest of you said fuck no, and none of you posted entertaining D&D scenarios that we would react to. So there you go. So Steve Holtz says dryad syndrome. If you've experienced it, you will know it exists. If a one can be rolled, they will roll it. Okay. I actually don't know what that is. Apparently, I have not experienced it.
But if it persists for 4 hours, you'll know you've experienced it.
Stephen Bosco says, I just want to say fuck yes in all caps because it feels good. Matthew Penna says, when a chick has more wood than you, that's a no. And Andrew says one word, splinters.
I mean, I think Andrew's is really the only, like, really relevant one here. Because, I mean, Matthew, are you telling me you don't like Thailand? That's all I'm getting from your fucking comment here, is that Thailand is, like, no-fly zone for you.
It's probably true of most of our listeners, to be honest with you. No, you know, in general, like I said, it comes down to it. Polished or not. If it's not polished, like if she's straight out of bark, mm-mm.
Oh, yeah, no.
Right, but if she takes care of herself, you know, she grooms, I can get down. I can get in there.
And that's where we are already. Yeah. All right. This is the kind of podcast we've got going that's for right. you.
Pop one of her roots out of socket. You know how I hit it. All right. So thanks to everyone who voted on the weekly listener poll. You can find those at jdgamercast.com. We'll have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if you remember. All right. So now is the time, the winter of our discontent.
So, Lang, you were the one at the end of Space Marines where you were just like, hey, don't ruin it. I kind of like Dark Angels. Now that you've read Codex Wonderbread, how do you feel?
Well, I mean, I still like them because the things that I liked about them didn't change. But that being said, almost nothing changed. So they just kind of gave you a little bit more. I think for people who are currently playing a Dark Angels army, they will be happy with this. But it's funny because after reading, you know, everything leading up to this, you know, most recently the Space Marines Codex, you look at it and you kind of think to yourself, like, you know, they really are kind of playing them down. Like, they're not really doing much to bring them up to the level of the Space Marines. They're just saying, like, yeah, they sucked. Okay, we're going to make them a little bit better here, there, and everywhere else. But you're still going to want to play Space Marines.
Right.
But like I said, if you're a Dark Angels player, you're hardcore about that Caliban, then you will be happy with this because things generally got better for you and you got more options. And by options, I mean data sheets as opposed to actual models or things that Space Marines can use. You're still stuck with the fucking Flying Chapel and all that kind of garbage. Mm-hmm. So there it is.
At least you don't have to suffer through Centurions. Like, you're not even just like, do I take Centurions because the rules themselves are really powerful, but the models are fucking idiotic as shit? At least you Dark Angels players, you don't even have that option. There's no such thing as a Centurion. So you just get to dodge that bullet.
Well, and I mean, a lot of stuff was updated, but the things that they have that are the same as Space Marines basically got the same treatment. So Whirlwinds, Vindicators, Predators got the same treatment. Land Speeders and so on and so forth. So the whole, like, good things come in threes still applies to Dark Angels, which is probably the biggest buff that you could have given Dark Angels players. It's just being able to say, hey guys, guess what? You now get this thing that, you know, everyone's been waiting for forever for Space Marines, just like Space Marines do, which is cool. But we also got a hilariously named psychic discipline, which is hilarious.
Okay, the worst part about it is the name is stupid, as is Games Workshop psychic discipline naming conventions. But I think it is one of the best fucking psychic disciplines in the game. There's so much that it can do, and there's so many good combos with it that I was just like, man, I would actually keep this psychic discipline instead of trading to a rulebook lore.
Honestly, it's pretty good. I looked at it and I said, you know what? I might be convinced to take a librarian.
That's exactly it. Now, you're not going to take Dark Angel's warlord traits, but that's been true for like how many books now?
Pretty much. I mean, that's kind of how it goes. All right, guys. We're going to start kind of, we have to jump around here because the way that this one's laid out is a little bit weird. We've got the Deathwing Strike Force and the Ravenwing Strike Force. If you play those armies inclusively, like I play Ravenwing or I play Deathwing, not just I play Dark Angels with Ravenwing and or Deathwing primarily. Mm-hmm. And we'll kind of get to those as we come back and we talk about like the actual, like list building side of things. But, outside of that, we're going to do as we always do. We're going to start with the appendix. Because that's the most important thing. That's the thing we're going to go for. Then we'll probably jump to the Interromancy discipline and then we'll just start going down the list. We're going to bounce around a little bit here because there's some interesting stuff here.
All right.
So, if you're playing Dark Angels, you get combat squads.
It's like your Space Marine Army.
Almost like your Space Marine
Army. Deathwing, a model of this special rule, has the Fearless and Hatred Chaos Space Marine special rules. Yep. I think Hatred Chaos Space Marine is new. Fearless is not.
I'm double-checking, but I believe it's the other way around. They had Hatred Chaos Space Marine.
Dude, Deathwing's been Fearless for life. They've never, ever taken
Faux checks. Life?
Faux life.
They've been Fearless, faux life. All right, I'm actually just going to flip around to make sure that I'm actually
looking
at the rules changes here so that we can comment on them without feeling like fucking idiots. But I've got an old book, and being brainwashed into thinking that special rules should go in weird places, I am now unable to find them.
They're actually right after the paint, like the pretty pictures, where it makes sense to have them.
I was just there.
Grim Resolve. Models with this special rule have the Stubborn special rule, and unless jinking, counter ballistic skill S2 when firing Overwatch. Handy. I mean, ballistic skill 2, Overwatch, you're doubling your number of successes. Handy. Ravenwing, a model of this special rule, can reroll failed cover saves when it jinks, which is really useful when you use the Ravenwing force organization chart. Hooray. Are you still flipping?
It's not there! Just keep reading. Dude, we'll fucking get there.
Warlord traits. We are already up to there. So, Warlord trait number one, the hunt. Your warlord has the precision shot special rule. In addition, your warlord's shooting attacks have the ignores cover special rule. Yay. I mean, dude, this is 40K. I think only Tau take an HQ, a warlord, where you're just like, man, this guy's got to shoot all game. You know, so pointless.
Yeah, so Deathwing used to be called Inner Circle, and it was always Fearless and preferred enemy. Chaos Space Marine. So,
well,
yes, hatred
as time goes by, they've stopped being preferred, and now I just hate them.
Now I just fucking hate them, which is good. We can go with that.
Courage of the First Legion. Your warlord and all friendly units with the Dark Angels faction within 12 inches of him have the Fearless special rule. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Not, I mean, if you're playing Deathwing or Ravenwing, you're already Fearless across the board, so...
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, Ravenwing probably lost Fearless.
No, Ravenwing don't have Fearless.
They used to have it as... Oh, so that's a change because they used to be Fearless. Number three, for the Lion, your warlord and his unit have the Furious Charge special rule. That's decent. That's probably the first one where you're like, yay, I got one that's useful. Number four, Brilliant Planning. When your warlord is alive and on the battlefield, you can add 1, 2, or subtract 1 from any of your reserve rolls. Choose after you roll the dice. Yay?
Ravenwing... As of the last book, we're just stubborn. Just Grim Resolve. Oh, right.
See,
you need your book. Deathwing, we're always Fearless. But anyways.
No. It's not in the Ravenwing rules. It was always in the unit entry.
I just looked at the unit entry.
Really? See?
Yeah.
I guess this is one of those things where...
God
because
damn it, Nathan.
I just don't care.
I know. That's the truth. All right. So... Warlord traits. What were you on?
I just finished Brilliant Planning.
Oh, perfect. Rapid Maneuver. Your warlord and his unit add 3 to their max move distance when they move flat out, turbo boost, run, or make charges. Number 6, Hold at All Costs. Your warlord and his unit have Feel No Pain special rule whilst they are within 3 inches of an objective marker.
I mean, 6 is the clear winner because when is Feel No Pain not good, yeah, especially when you can throw it on a Ravenwing squad,
yeah,
especially a command squad or a Deathwing and a Deathwing command squad. All very, very useful, but can't you accomplish the exact same thing with an Apothecary? Oh, you can. Oh, shit. So This really is just a fucking terrible Warlord trait.
Don't have to use it. All right, so the changes to the rules, the biggest one that we're going to talk about is Grim Resolve, where basically everything in the list has Ballistic Skill 2 and firing Overwatch. The thing that I liked most about this is between Stubborn and this in particular, they actually feel like they have a chapter trait now.
Yes.
Right? And I really liked the fact that they didn't just go, yeah, their chapter trait is that they're stubborn. Right? Like, I like the idea that they actually said, all right, you know what? Space Marines, they got that little bump. Even in the last book, they got the little bump if you were playing, if you were picking a chapter and going with it. These guys need that bump too. So the ballistic skill 2 for firing Overwatch, I really, really like.
So now it's really just Blood Angels that have a Codex Marine book.
Basically,
and
yes.
No chapter traits.
A super dull Codex Marine book.
And no chapter traits. Good on you, Blood Angels players. I hope you love fucking armored gnomes.
None
whatsoever. That's all you get.
Alright, so we're going to talk about Interomancy.
Oh, it's such a stupid name.
It is just, that is just, and okay, listen to
the... M as in Mancy.
Listen to this description and tell me that at no point it sounds sexual to you. In order to aid the...
My eyes are closed. Say it's
sexual. Okay. In order to aid the interrogator chaplain in their cruel labors, the librarians of the Dark Angels have mastered a sinister and invasive form of telepathy. Few sensations are more horrific for a victim than the insidious slither of the librarian's thoughts as they writhe through gaps in his mental defenses, flaying and twisting his psyche at will.
Damn, I wish you'd broken first instead of me, but...
I only broke because you broke, dude. I was getting into it.
No.
Mind Worm, and by worm they mean dick. Mind Dick, Warp Charge 1, Mind Dick is a focus witchfire power with the following profile. Range 12, Strength 6, AP 2, Assault 1, ignores cover, Sap Will. Sap Will, if a model suffers any unsaved wounds from Mind Dick's, its weapon skill, ballistic skill, initiative, and leadership characteristics are reduced by 3 to a minimum of 1 for the rest of the battle.
Huge.
Big time.
I mean, it's absolutely great. Like, when we get to future powers, I'll start to talk about why Mind Worm is phenomenal, especially as a Primaris, where your one psyker is just going to camp this lore because it's that good, and you're going to start comboing it.
Yep. All right, so we've got Seed of Fear. We all know what that seed is. Warp 1, Seed
came
of Fear.
From Mind Dick.
That's exactly. It came from the Mind Dick. Mind Cock? Mind Dick?
Mind Member. I think member. I mean, you get the alliteration with mind member.
You do get it with mind member, but I feel like it needs to be more invasive, as per the Interomancy description.
Touché. Seed of Fear is a malediction that targets all enemy units within 9 inches. So I don't know why they didn't say it's Nova. I guess. Whilst the power is in effect, all target units must take morale checks as well as pinning and fear tests on 3d6. On the surface, not super great. Combined with other spells in this discipline, really fucking awesome.
We've got Righteous Repugnance. Hey. Warp Charge 1 is a blessing that targets a single friendly unit within 24 inches. Whilst the power is in effect, the target unit has the Rage special rule.
Fabulous. For one warp charge, fucking great.
It's nice to have, man, and you're probably going to use it.
Yep.
Aversion, Warp Charge 1. Aversion is a malediction that targets a single enemy unit within 24 inches. Whilst the power is in effect, the target unit can only fire snapshots. Hey, that's actually a pretty nice one.
Mm-hmm.
With a 24-inch range, you'll probably get a decent amount of use out of it. You know, picking off a squad at the back that you don't necessarily want to deal with, but you can't get into right now. I like being able to just say, right, you know what, just fuck you, snapshots.
Well, again, I mean, if you have a Devastator squad with rocking 4 plasma cannons, you hit it with this, and none of the plasma cannons can fire because template weapons can't fire snapshots. So you're just like, I've shut you down. You're now worthless. Like, you're wasting your points. So you've got a lot of very cool things that you can do with that power.
Right. So now the Mind Cock starts getting pretty 50 shades. We got the Maelstrom of Misery, which is a Warp Charge 2. Give me a second to stew in that one.
Right.
24-inch range, Strength 1, AP 2, Assault 1, Blast, Neuroshock. Always wounds on a 4+ is what Neuroshock does. Has no effect on vehicles or buildings. Meh.
Yeah, I mean, for 2 Warp Charges, I don't think you're going to end up using this one too much. It's very situational. Maybe a Terminator squad that just deep-striked in in the open, you might just take it because
it's
there.
But the AP2 is nice, but otherwise, I don't think that's what you're looking to get out of this lore.
Not out of this lore.
All right. Trephination, which...
Almost as stupid sounding as Interomancy.
I read, and I said, you know what? That has to be a fucking word. So I Googled it. Guess what it is?
What?
It is essentially like a surgical term for, like, driving a metal spike into somebody's head. And even in the description, it's just like a white-hot spike plunges straight into the victim's mind. So if we're talking about worm cocks, that's a skull fucking. This is the skull fucking ability.
It's skull fucking, but I want to slow clap Jake Games Workshop for being able to pull a word that I didn't know, and they used it correctly. And they didn't even, like, change it, so it's just like, trepanation scullery. It's all one word, so we can trademark it. Because this is what Games Workshop does to words. They bastardize them so that the lawyers are happy.
So the trepanation is the skull fucking spell. It's a focus witch fire power with a range of 18. The affected model must roll 2d6 plus 2, subtract their leadership, and they suffer a number of wounds equal to the result. Armor saves and cover saves cannot be taken, so it's a banshee scream.
It's a skull fucking. No, but see, here's what's so good about it. It is 2d6 plus 2, and they subtract their leadership. Difference is straight wounds ignoring armor. So you do get invuln saves against this. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of huge invuln saves, but combine this with Mindworm. Because they're both focused witchfire. So you basically pick your multi-wound model, you pick your enemy's warlord, and you drop his leadership by 3, and then you basically psychic scream him, which is just absolutely fucking brilliant, because unless he is rolling super low, you're killing his warlord with this. One single psychic phase costs you 3 warp charges.
Yep.
Holy shit. Nice. Like, that's just absolutely phenomenal utility out of this. The ability to pick out all of your opponent's multi-wound characters.
First you give them the tip.
Yeah.
Then you jam that sucker home.
Absolutely. And you don't even have to fucking deal with them. It's great.
No, don't call them in the morning. Nothing.
Right.
Mind Wipe is Warp Charge 3.
He's a saint.
Mind Wipe is Warp Charge 3. There's a really tasteless rape joke in there, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to leave it. I'm going to leave it by the wayside and then just say, you know what? I'm better than that. We're all better than that.
Are you hoping that I...
No, I'm not.
All right.
Okay. I'm not. I'm just saying, you guys know what's happening. You guys know what's going on here. Mind Wipe is a...
Watch your drink.
Oh, my God. Mind Wipe is a malediction that targets a single enemy unit within 24 inches. All models in the target unit have their weapon skill and ballistic skill reduced to 1 until the end of their next turn, at which point the unit must take a leadership test. If the leadership test is failed, the effects of Mind Wipe last for the whole game.
It's good, it's useful. I'm not looking at it for the second effect, because if it lasts all game, hooray, that's a nice to have. But the fact that you can drop a weapon skill to 1 right before you charge in is fabulous. You're hitting on 3s, they're hitting you back on 5s. If it's your Deathwing, you know, with your Terminator armor, you're not going to really take any wounds on the way back, no matter how badass of a combat unit it is, and you're just going to tear them apart. And that's where this gets really good. I mean, the first time I read it, I thought that you could combine the leadership check on this with Seed of Fear.
No.
So force it on 3d6, but Seed of Fear is very clear that it's not all leadership tests. It's just specifically morale pinning fear. And that's why it's just like, okay, so you're like, if you get the for the rest of the game, hooray, but let's be honest, the unit you're hitting this with is the unit you're going to fucking kill this turn. That's what you're looking for. I mean, yeah, maybe early game you might throw it to drop a big bad shooting unit down to ballistic skill 1, but remember, you have a version for that, and that's 1 warp charge. So same range, basically same effect, only at least with this, it's actually a little bit worse, because template weapons can still fire at ballistic skill 1. Mm-hmm. They can't fire if they're snapshotting. So realistically, Mind Wipe is only going to be used to set up your big charge. So that unit you need to fucking kill, because it's his big bad unit of combat monsters. You're just going to drop into weapon skill 1, you're going to hit him with your big bad unit, and you're going to run through.
Relics of Caliban.
They're so bad.
They're basically the same. So Foe Smiter got slightly better. It went to Assault 4 and got Shred. Lion's Roar is the same. Mace of Redemption is the same. Monster Slayer of Caliban is the same. Shroud of Heroes is the same. And Eye of the Unseen was added. Oh my god, because they added a new item, because they probably really need this. The Bearer of the Eye of the Unseen has the Fear and Preferred Enemy special rules.
I mean,
Thank God they added that.
I mean, Eye of the Unseen was super cheap on points. It was 10 or something dumb like that, which is great, because with Seed of Fear, you can actually potentially have, like, remember, you're basically stacking the Screaming Banner. Like, let's be honest here. Like, this is the old Vampire Count fear trick, is force the fear check, and then thanks to that one psychic power, you can pretty much guarantee they're going to fail it, which is, again, super useful. I mean, oh, Eye of the Unseen is 40 points? What are they fucking mad? No, never take it.
I was like, I don't know, I don't remember it being 10 points.
See, I remember one being 10 points, and I couldn't imagine it. Shroud of Heroes. Shroud,
like, clearly that is.
Clearly that is the one that is 10 points, because it's so fucking worthless. 40 points, never take it. Yeah. Moving on.
Okay. So, now we get into the actual list.
Well, before we do that, there's one thing that I want to point out, and I could go read the other Dark Angels book to see if this is a new edition or not, but that would have been foreplanning. I noticed here, as I was flipping through on my way to something else, that in the Terminator armor... it's totally, it's the same, but they just moved it here. In the old book it said you get to the Vengeful Strike rule, which is referred to the Deathwing Terminator one, but just keep in mind that it says right here in the Terminator armor, a model with the Deathwing special rule that arrives by Deep Strike treats all of its ranged weapons as having the Twin Link special rule until the end of the turn. So, that wasn't taken out, it was just moved.
Well, okay.
I just wanted to point it out in case we get to Deathwing and you're like, whoa, this was taken out.
Oh, I didn't even read that far.
Oh, okay.
I basically went through and I was like, are the units different? Nope. Did the points change? Okay, maybe a little bit. And then I just like quickly went through the rules.
The units? See, I don't care about Dark Angels enough to have checked.
No.
Changes.
Certain things did change, like the Black Knights, the Ravenwing Black Knights, which we all agreed were like super awesome, super great.
Yeah.
Their Twinling Plas and their Corvus Hammers and all that kind of shit. They got 2 points cheaper.
Woo!
There you go. Otherwise, everything's pretty much the same price because it's Space Marines. You can't expect a lot of change here. Some of the special characters had slight points adjustments, but in general, things are pretty much the same. Everything's been rebuilt according to the new style. Right, so they get defaulted with warlord traits. We all know all the warlord traits generally suck.
They're especially bad in this book.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I think for I'm gonna be straight. I'm gonna be real with you guys. Let's be real. Can I be real?
All right, be real. Be real.
Bring it to you. You guys can read, and these characters are not interesting enough to talk about. So we're not gonna go through all the special characters.
Hooray! Oh my god, that is the best news ever.
I'm just saying, man. Like, it just,
no, you're right. Okay, but
what are we going to do? We're going to talk about another chaplain special character and how he has chaplain-y special character type things?
So, things that are of note. You no longer need Belial and Samael to run Deathwing and Ravenwing appropriately.
Correct.
You now straight up have Force Organization charts. And can I go on a rant about this? Is now appropriate, or should I wait till we're there?
We can go ahead and go on a rant about this. I mean... Like I said, we already talked about the main things being that Predators, Whirlwinds, and Vindicators have their special thing. Landspeeders have their special thing. Bikes are now all in line with the cost of bikes as bikes cost now.
Yes.
So, you know, you're not looking at, you know, like everything is in line. Everything is in line with what we saw in the Space Marine book now. So, hey, surprise. Like, they're treating this like a chapter trait, so generally all the points are the same.
Yes.
Now... Maybe before we talk about that, before we talk about the Deathwing and Ravenwing Strike Force, let's actually talk about if you're just playing Dark Angels. Let's talk about the Lion. The Lion Blade Strike Force. So the Lion Blade Strike Force is organized. What
are you fucking talking about? Where is that?
Go to Forces of the Dark Angels.
Lionblade
Strike Force is the same as
the Demi Company.
The Demi Company. That's basically what it is. It has the same format, has the same breakdown, and it gives you special rules on top of it. So
I missed that completely because it had the two Force Orgs in the fucking back.
Right. I did, however, read all of these parts. So this does, again, bring you in line with what Space Marines got as well. So you actually get to use these Battle Demi Company style. You can do the company support if you're taking two Battle Demi Companies and so on and so forth, which give you extra bonuses. So I'm going to read those right now. Company support. If a Lion's Blade Strike Force includes two Battle Demi Companies, one including a company master and the other including a chaplain, then together they form a battle company. a unit from the battle company that has the option to take a Rhino, Razorback, or Drop Pod as a dedicated transport gets to take it at no points cost. So, the same as Space Marines.
Mm-hmm.
A supreme fire discipline, unless jinking all models in this formation have the Grim Resolve, with the Grim Resolve special rule, fire Overwatch using their normal ballistic skill.
That's huge.
Yeah. Makes this book a little more exciting now, doesn't it?
You know, it is the first thing that we have seen where we're just like, there is actually a good reason to play Dark Angels, and this kind of makes Dark Angels the premier shooting
Space Marine army. Yep.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. No, what I find really, really interesting about this is they thought about it. They really, really did. They said, okay, what do we do with space? Like, what do we do with Dark Angels? Dark Angels, they were the ones with plasma to begin with. They were the ones who had these special range weapons and so on and so forth. They had their interrogator chaplains, yada, yada. But in general, you know, now that everyone gets those things, it's like, well, who gives a shit? But this has now set them apart again as, like you said, the premier shooting army for Space Marines, simply because of the fact that, yeah, come get me. I'm just going to stand and shoot you. Like, yeah. I'm perfectly happy. We've always said Space Marines are a shooting army. So this is the way to go, and it's really, really nice. Now, it's so good. It's so goddamn good that I think a lot of people are going to look for that full, you know, Lion's Blade Strike Force type thing and not just do the Battle Demi Company action. You know what I mean? They're going to try to cram everything in, get all the free shit, and get all the bonus shooting for everything with Grim Resolve.
Well, what's so good about this, which makes it different from the normal Space Marine Demi Company, like, you know, whatever the fuck they called theirs, is you have to take the one Battle Demi Company. We get it. It's your only core. And we know that this is going to be about 1,000 points. But then when you start to look at all of the other options, they're super small. And that was the big difference.
Gladius Strike Force was what it was called.
Oh, yeah, the Gladius Strike Force. Because when you were looking at it in the Marine thing, where it's just like, well, if I want to take some armor, I now have to take 5 units of tanks. And you're like, holy shit, it's so many points. Or I have to take an entire veteran company. Or I have to take all of these things. But, like, even when you look at this, the Demi Company is identical, which is great, because who does not want a fucking unit of Dreadnoughts?
The organization is identical.
Yeah, the Battle Demi Company itself proper. But then when you look at Inner Circle at 0-1, and you're just choosing one additional HQ. So you're going to take your Librarian because Interromancy is that fucking good.
Yeah.
You know, and then you look at Ravenwing Attack Squadron, which is one Ravenwing Bike Squadron or Attack Bike Squadron, and then one Landspeeder or Landspeeder Vengeance. Super cheap. Ravenwing Support Squadron, a unit of Landspeeders with a Ravenwing Dark Shroud or Landspeeder Vengeance. So it's just like, they're all so small. And yeah, of course they all have special rules because that's the way that these are built down.
Which we'll talk about now.
Sure.
Because in general, these are not quite as good as the ones we got out of Space Marines. So I think this is the trade-off you're going for. What they give you here with these data sheets is not nearly as good as the stuff that we were getting out of the Space Marines, where it's just like, if you put 3 Land Raiders together, fuck you. You can't hurt them, right?
Okay,
like,
but I think the big difference here is, if you are a Dark Angels player, there is no reason to not take this Lion's Blade Strike Force, because the points allow you to kind of take everything that you want to take.
Oh, of course.
Whereas when you were a Space Marine player, you know, I built a list that I was like, it's kind of okay. I will play a Combined Arms Detachment every single time, because that Gladius was just so fucking restrictive. And I think that's fundamentally the difference here is, okay, so I have slightly worse special rules, but I'm actually taking this and I'm getting Supreme Fire Discipline. I'm not going to take company support. We've already talked about how 2 Demi companies are just fucking retarded levels of points. But
again, in order to do this thing, the Lion's Blade support, you need to take 2 Demi companies.
Nope.
Am I retarded? Here we go.
You are. In order to get the company support, which is free transports, you need to take 2 Battle Demi companies. To get Supreme Fire Discipline, you are just playing Lion's Blade Strike Force. So you need 1 Demi company and then whatever the fuck else you want. And that's why I think that this is slightly better, because in the Gladius, everything was so goddamn points heavy that every single selection was in that 6 to 1200 point range. So when you took your Battle Demi Company, it was take one of the smallest other ones. That's your list. Whereas here, you get a good solid Demi Company. So even if you don't want to play Deathwing or Ravenwing, this is actually a really good option for just Dark Angels. And they've never really had that before, because they've always been the codex of, you play us because you want Deathwing and Ravenwing.
Huh. Got it. Yeah, cool. Ah, right on.
Missed that.
So, well, I just didn't think about it that way. But yeah, absolutely. I just, it's underneath that rule, as so one, the, and reason.
Listen,
so,
you would think that you would read it that way.
I just got that bad case of mindworm, you know?
Should consult a homunculus.
Yes, that's correct. All right, so let's talk about the data sheets here. Let's get into the mix a little bit.
All right.
All right, so there's not a lot to choose from. There's a lot of kind of random things, but what they give us in the Dark Angels book is actually a lot less than what we got in the Space Marine book.
Oh, and yeah, it's basically a lot smaller.
Starts with, as we talked about, the Battle Demi Company. Now, if you're just using the Battle Demi Company and you're not using the Lion's thing, the Lion's Dick, it's the same Battle Demi Company, but the special rules that you get with it are Fire Discipline, unless jinking, all models with the Grim Resolve special rule use Ballistic Skill 3 instead of 2. So if you're just using that, but you're not using the other thing, it's Ballistic Skill 3 instead of 2, which is, hey, we're going up in the world.
Yeah.
And, of course, you have objective secured. Yay.
Which is great.
Now
we've got 3 dreadnoughts to have objective secured. I mean, it's still the greatest thing ever.
Now we've got the Deathwing Redemption Force. So, formation is one model chosen from the following list. Belial, Company Master, Interrogator Chaplain, or Librarian. 2 to 5 Deathwing Terminator Squads. 0 to 1 Deathwing Command Squads. 0 to 1 Deathwing Knights. And 0 to 1 units of Venerable Dreadnoughts. Note that if Venerable Dreadnoughts are taken, you can only have one model in the squad, and they must be given a drop pod as a dedicated transport. All independent characters in the formation must have Terminator armor. In case you don't know what Deathwing are, they're Terminators. Okay? Cool. Preferred Enemy Chaos Space Marines is a special rule that you get, and you also get the Deathwing Assault special rule. All units in this formation must be placed in Deep Striking Reserve. Immediately after determining Warlord traits, make a secret note of which of your turns you would like each Deathwing Redemption Force in your army to arrive. Your turn 2, 3, or 4. All units in this formation arrive automatically by Deep Strike at the start of the chosen turn. If this formation includes a Venerable Dreadnought embarked on the drop pod automatically arrives from the start of the chosen turn and ignores the special rule of the drop pod. Take the fight to the enemy is another special rule. Units from this formation can either shoot and run or run and shoot in the shooting phase. The turn that they arrive from Deep Strike.
Yay, battle focus. Exactly what Grey Knights have.
Yeah. So, again, bonuses. Hey, everybody, you play fucking Deathwing, and you're just like, man, I love Deathwing. I lose every game, but I love them so much. You're probably feeling pretty good about this.
But see, what I love about this is this, in conjunction with that Lion's Blade Strike Force, where you already have a Demi Company on the board, you can use this. Like, what I love about that Assault is you pick 2, 3, or 4. So you're never going to pick turn 2, because you already have your 3 full tactical squads, right. Your Assault squad, your Devastator squad, your support. You have a good solid 1,000 to 1,200 points holding the fort. This is the squad. This is what you bring to be your fucking closer. So you're just like, listen, I want them on turn 4. And then you just rain hell from the sky. And you swing the battle that direction.
Yep.
And it works really well. Because I think that if you're playing Deathwing, you're choosing the Force Org slot, the Force Organization chart that they have in the back of the book over this data sheet, because you just have a little more freedom with it.
Yeah, if you want to go hardcore Deathwing.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got the Ravenwing Attack Squad. Oh, my God, guys. Deathwing and now Ravenwing.
Holy
formation
shit. Changing the game.
Formation is one Ravenwing Bike Squad or one Ravenwing Attack Bike Squad, one unit of Ravenwing Landspeeders, or one Ravenwing Landspeeder Vengeance. The unit of Ravenwing Landspeeders may only include one model.
Then why would you say unit of Raven? Whatever, you know what?
Because
knock
that's
yourself
how
out.
It works now.
Knock yourself out.
Special rules: all of these things gain scout,
which is great.
Attack great. Squadron: if the Ravenwing Landspeeder or Ravenwing Landspeeder Vengeance from this formation scores one or more hits upon an enemy unit in the shooting phase, then all models in this formation's Ravenwing Bike Squad or Ravenwing Attack Bike Squad add 1 to their ballistic skill characteristic when shooting at the same target. All right, fine. Summon the Deathwing! Friendly units composed entirely of models with the Deathwing special rule do not scatter when they deep strike so long as the first model is placed within 12 inches of a model from this formation. For this to work, the model from this formation must have been on the battlefield at the start of the turn. So, you're basically buying a deep strike point for your Deathwing, if you want.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really solid teleport homer.
Yeah.
Ravenwing has always acted as teleport homers for Deathwing, so... yay? I mean, for me, I think the interesting thing here is the attack squadron rule, where you're able to boost your ballistic skill up to 5, because with the fact that everything you're shooting with your bikes is going to be twin-linked for the most part, 2+ rerollable is basically meaning the firepower output of this squad is about 100%.
Yeah.
And that's huge. That's really nice to have.
Ravenwing support squad. The formation is 1 unit of Ravenwing Landspeeders, 1 unit of Ravenwing Landspeeder Vengeance, or 1 Ravenwing Death Shroud. The unit of Ravenwing Landspeeders must include at least 3 models this time. Now, here's what's cool about this one. These vehicles get Grim Resolve, Interceptor, and Strafing Run.
But vehicles they can't snapshot. What the fuck is Grim Resolve doing for them?
They're stubborn now.
Right? That's why I'm like, why? What the fuck? Like, I'm honestly confused, and I'm like, am I just stupid?
Shut up,
am
idiot. They have Grim Resolve.
Am I fucking missing something? Like, what is happening? Like, why would they even give... you know, fuck it. Okay, so typos.
Why not?
Interceptor is really good.
Yep.
For this, I guess. I mean, they're typically Interceptor you're seeing on anti-flyers. So I guess if something is coming out of reserve, yay. Not great.
Raven's Shield. When an enemy unit declares a charge against a friendly unit within the Ravenwing special rule, models from this formation within 24 inches...
Oh, this is why they get Grim Resolve. Right. There we go.
Of that friendly unit can then fire Overwatch against the charging unit, even though vehicles cannot normally fire Overwatch. I was just waiting. Got it.
So, in fairness, when you choose this in your Lion's Blade Strike Force, that Overwatch is that ballistic skill, which can be pretty huge. But then again, who the fuck charges Landspeeders?
Well, and again, it's just Landspeeders, man.
I guess it's just a friendly unit with the Ravenwing special rule. So, hug your bikes, I guess?
Yeah, as long as the models from this formation are within 24 inches of that friendly unit.
Yeah, you know, that's actually... All right, the more it's I fine, think about this,
can...
the...
But you can just fucking do it with Devastators, man.
Yeah, but I mean, the fucking fire output of this unit, your squad of 3 Landspeeders can have double heavy bolters, so that's 18 strength 5 AP 4 shots. Your Landspeeder Vengeance is firing fucking plasma? Dude, like that's actually pretty fucking good. But again, why are your bikes being charged? Like... Are you using bikes wrong? Like, what's happening?
The Ravenwing Silence Squadron.
Well, you missed support squadron. All vehicles in this formation must form a single vehicle squadron, described in the rules. However, this vehicle squadron counts as 2 units for the purposes of calculating victory points if it is completely destroyed. So, you actually help to protect your overpriced Landspeeder, which makes them slightly worth taking.
There you go.
Now we can get to the Silence Squadron.
The Silent Squadron. 2 Nephilim Jet Fighters and 1 Ravenwing Dark Talon.
Yay! Yeah. All the shittiest flyers in the game in one combined unit.
All the dumbest looking flyers in the game in one unit.
That's also true.
Capture Run. When making a bombing run with the Stasis Bomb of this formation's Ravenwing Dark Talon, do not roll for scatter. The Stasis Bomb hits automatically. Furthermore, enemy models that suffer an unsaved wound from the stasis bomb must roll 2 dice and pick the highest result when taking their initiative test to see if they are removed as casualties. On missions that use victory points to determine the winner, the Slay the Warlord secondary objective is worth D3 additional points to the controlling player at the end of the game if the enemy warlord was removed as a casualty as a result of a capture run. Because they want to go use that Interromancy at them.
They want to skullfuck them, man.
They want to spray that Interromancy all over them. Fighter Escort. When making reserve rolls, make a single roll for the entire formation. which you can choose to reroll on a successful reserve roll. All units in the formation arrive from reserve.
That's what I said. You can now get all the worst flyers in the game together. One unit of it.
Now we've got the Hammer of Caliban. One Tech Marine. One unit chosen from the following list. Land Raider, Land Raider Crusader, Land Raider Redeemer. And one unit chosen from the following list. Predators, Whirlwinds, Vindicators. This formation's unit of Predators, Whirlwinds, or Vindicators must include three models. Now, I get a kick out of this. Special rules. Monster Hunters and Tank Hunters. Nathan, do you remember what Predators get when you buy three of them?
Isn't it Monster Hunter and Tank Hunter?
Sure is, man.
Okay. But now my Whirlwinds, with their Strike 5, can start punching through armor right, with buddy, Tank dude. Hunter.
Just wreck them. Wreck all of them. It was a bit of a strained rule there, but whatever. Okay, so Hammer the Heretics is another special rule that you get. This formation's Tech Marine must begin the game embarked on this formation's Land Raider. Whilst the Tech Marine from this formation is embarked upon the transport vehicle from this formation, that vehicle's ballistic skill is increased to 5. So that's nice.
Yeah.
And all vehicles in this formation form a single unit, yada, 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 like the other one.
Interesting. You know, that's not terrible. I mean, run triple Vindicator so you can run the fucking ignore cover apocalyptic barrage.
With Tank Hunters and Monster Hunter?
It'd just be hilarious.
Because honestly, that's what I do, but...
Well, that's because the Predators are losing out. They don't gain any benefit. And you don't want to have a stationary fucking ordnance battery of Whirlwinds attached to a fucking Land Raider.
Well, they do gain the fact that if one of them is destroyed, they don't all lose it then. I guess, if you want to split hairs.
Well, I guess with the Predators, sure.
Yeah.
No, but like I said, so it's just like the Whirlwinds are a terrible choice because, again, what do you do with Land Raiders? You ram them down your opponent's throat, you run them right up the middle of the board using that AB-14, and you disgorge whatever fucking unit you want to go punch them in the face.
That's right.
That is the purpose of a Land Raider. So you're not going to buy us a unit of Whirlwind so your Land Raider can stand back and shoot its two last cannons at Ballistic Skill 5 because it's a fucking waste.
It's twiddling last cannons at Ballistic Skill 5.
Predators.
That's 100% output, Nathan.
Right? Predators are okay if you really want to go with a hardcore vehicle hunter because if you took a traditional Land Raider and all three of your Predators upgraded their turrets to twin-linked las, that would be five... like twin link las cannons with Tank Hunters, which is going to just fucking ruin someone's day. But it's a lot of points. Like for me, I would just go Vindicators because it's hilarious. I talked about this in the last
one.
I talked about how Vindicators are fucking hilarious, and that's the only reason you take them.
All right, so let's talk about the Deathwing Strike Force and the Ravenwing Strike Force. Nathan, you had something to say about this. Does it still apply after I pointed out the fact that they basically get the whole Denny Company thing?
It does kind of apply. Less so, because my big rant was the whole, like, why is it that Games Workshop has moved completely away from Force Organization charts and removed them from, like, the last, what, three codexes in a row? And they've just said, hey, this is how you build armies now. This is what you do. This is what you get. And then, by the way, Dark Angels, were phoning it in. Have some Force Orgs. I guess... Yeah, it, like I said, it's less so now that there is the Lion's Blade Strike Force, which I completely missed while I was reading the codec, because I started from the back, and then I went to the data sheets and read from it here. I guess if you want to be that guy that's running pure Deathwing or pure Ravenwing, or because these two Force Orgs actually do complement each other, you could run both of them as a mixed Deathwing-Ravenwing, but I guess... At the end of the day, why would you ever, ever choose to do that when you still have the option of running that Lion's Blade Strike Force? Your Demi Company is great. You're the premier shooting one, so you can take lots of Ravenwing squadrons, because that's what I really like about the auxiliaries, which are all like one plus in that Strike Force, is it's one unit with a single speeder. So it's just like you can take lots of multiples, and you can take that Deathwing Strike Force and a Ravenwing unit or two or three, and it's just like you can really just build it and become that premier shooting force. Because, you know, again, 10 Terminators is scary, especially when they're dropping down and they get the twin linked the turn they drop, because that's, I mean, holy assault cannons. Like, right? Like, why would you not take double assault cannons when you turn you deep strike in, so there you've got your fucking twin linked on it? But it's just like the firepower that you can pour out. And now knowing when I declare a charge against you, you get a free shooting phase.
That's right.
You know, and that, I think that's really what it comes down to, is why would you still not choose to run it? Because even if you like Deathwing, you can still take your demi company with that Deathwing formation.
Yeah, well, what I love about them is, even in the situation where you used to do this with Space Marines, and even still before we ran into this thing, it's like, yeah, as soon as they start getting a little bit close, it's just like, I move up into rapid fire range, I unload on you, and I stand in front of you. Yeah, come at me. Come get me. It'll be great. All right, so let's actually talk about the Deathwing Strike Force here. Restrictions. All units in this detachment must have the Deathwing Special Rule or be dedicated transports. Units of Venerable Dreadnoughts in this formation may only include one model and must be given a drop pod as a dedicated transport. All right, so the compulsory is one HQ, two elites, and then you can take two more HQ and 10 more elites if you're playing like an 8 billion point game.
Right, 40 points per model. I need 12 slots.
Clear. Summon to war. All units in this detachment must begin the game in Deep Strike Reserve. If your army includes Raven Wing Attack Squadron or a Raven Wing Strike Force, see below, you can choose to automatically pass or fail any reserve rolls you make for units in this detachment. There's no need to roll. First Knight of Caliban. If this detachment is your primary, you get to reroll your stupid-ass Warlord trait.
Right.
Take the fight to the enemy. Units from this detachment can either shoot or run then shoot in the shooting phase, the turn they arrive by deep strike. So now it's everyone, not just those guys. But it's basically the same as the other.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, that's
Deathwing things, like, Redemption Force.
When you're looking at the options here, the Deathwing Redemption Force requires you to take the 1 HQ, 2 to 5 units of Terminators, and everything else becomes voluntary, right? I mean, obviously, you have less flexibility within that one because it forces you to make all of the other units 0 to 1, whereas here, if you really wanted to go balls to the wall with the worst Terminator unit in the game, you could. You could take 10 of them. You fucking moron. Knights.
No, you, come on.
Oh, they're so bad.
Get in there, man. Get in there.
But anyway, so I mean, like, still, to me, I think
they still have Flail of the Unforgiven.
This one is, like, the reason why I like the other data sheet better is it gives you everything that you need to run Deathwing. But instead of the whole, if you have Ravenwing, you can reroll your reserve rolls, it's just pick a fucking turn they're in. So even if you want to do the exact opposite of what I said, because I said I'm a huge fan of bringing them in late game and just steamrolling, because when you throw like fucking 20 Terminators with a fucking Librarian in the game turn 4, like, game over, right? Like, it just, you what know, the fuck can your opponent do to react to that?
Well, I think anything in the game that where you're just removing the random element, and it's just like, yeah, you just, you know what, you just do what you want to do with it. Because even today's standards of Warhammer 40,000, people generally are still scared of Deep Strike.
Mm-hmm.
But what, like, if I put them in reserve, when will they come in? But what if I need them now? So, like, there's still people out there who deploy everything on the table turn one and never use reserves.
Yep. Which is crazy because, I mean, again, like, we're Firestorm players, fucking Fold Space Drive entry all day, every day, and reserves in Firestorm are a cruel mistress compared to 40K.
Compared to 40K.
Oh my god, 40K. So I have a 66% chance of success on turn two, not a 33%? Fuck.
Easy peasy, dude.
Right? All day, every day. No, but I mean, like, that's the thing where it's just like, why would you choose to take this where it's like, if you have this other thing going on, then you get this benefit compared to straight up pick turn 2, 3, or 4. They're fucking in. Don't roll.
Yeah.
Everything's in.
We got the Raven Wing Strike Force. All units in this detachment must have the Raven Wing Special Rule. First Huntsman. If this detachment is your primary detachment, you can reroll your shitty Warlord traits. Speed of the Raven. During your first turn or second, if the units in this detachment were placed in reserves, any units from this detachment that turbo boost or move flat out count as jinking until your next turn. However, units from this detachment that do so can still fire their guns normally in your turn. In your next turn, they do not have to fire snapshots.
That's a great rule.
Really, really, really nice. It's basically removing the biggest detriment to using bikes and moving quickly like that, right? They're being very clear about the fact that, like, no, you know what? You remember the olden days? It's the olden days again.
Yep. All benefits, no drawbacks.
And then Strike as One is basically all units in this detachment must either be placed in reserve or deployed as normal. If placed in reserve, all units in this detachment arrive automatically at the start of your second turn. The Ravenwing Strike Force is pretty interesting because unlike the Deathwing one, you actually have a proper force org chart. Compulsory 1 HQ, 2 fast attack, but then you have access to 2 more HQs, 1 elites, 10 fast attack, and 3 heavy support. So you can go ahead and take those good things comes in threes units.
Yeah, basically you get everything but tactical marines and scouts.
Right.
You have access to them. So, I mean, exactly. If you want a squadron of 3 dreadnoughts, go for it.
Yeah. Get them in there, right? Take some heavy support, go for it. Like, I really like the fact that they let you build a proper Ravenwing list and not just like, you like Ravenwing, huh? Bikes
and
land speeders for a day, just for days. But yeah, there you go. There you have it, guys. That is the Dark Angels. We burned through a lot of this because, again, most of it we've already talked about and you guys have seen, and it's also not new. So,
well, yeah, and that's
Azrael is
a Lord of War, which we knew was going to come because every chapter master has moved to Lord of War. Fucking Ghazghoul is a Lord of War. I don't get it either, because basically you're saying, you know, this coolest of special characters, you're never going to take him because you're always filling your Lord of War slot with something that will actually annihilate portions of your enemies.
Correct.
So it's just cheaper. I could have this one guy who is a slightly better captain, or I could have a Baneblade.
Or I could take a knight. I could go throw an Imperial Knight in there.
Well, no, Imperial Knights you can just ally in.
Oh, yeah,
I can take a fucking Titan.
Because they're not actually Lord of War.
Let me take a Warlord Titan. Or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, but like that's always it, where it doesn't really make sense.
It's the same old dumb model for Azrael, too.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, reading about that Lion's Blade Strike Force has made me feel better about this book than I was at the outset.
Yep.
Because
the biggest thing that I wanted to talk about when it comes to this book is very, very few Space Marine armies have this kind of dichotomy in terms of list building, in the sense that you can play them as they are, as Dark Angels, but there are two completely separate types of lists that are so different from the standard Dark Angels that that's what you end up being, like most people end up choosing from. I know people who play Dark Angels, Deathwing, and Ravenwing. They don't play all of them. They don't play two of them. They play fucking one. They pick one because that's the one they like, and then that's the one that they play. So I found it kind of interesting that we didn't actually get more, because I felt like there was more opportunity here to add to those things, to add to the Deathwing and add to the Ravenwing. You know what I'm saying? Instead of just saying like, hey, you know what? We did this a couple years ago. We added a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they weren't necessarily successful, but whatever. Yeah,
but you know what, though? I honestly feel like the two slight changes that they have made in this, and granted, one of these changes is specific to a formation, so by all means discount it, but I feel like the two changes that were made that kind of feed into if you're going to play that straight Deathwing or you're going to play that straight Ravenwing is with Deathwing, Dreadnoughts and Squadrons, and like a unit of Dreadnoughts is a game changer. Because, like, the thing is, like, remember, for the longest time, Deathwing was five model max.
Right.
And the last book was the first time you saw the ability to take bigger squads, which is great, because I don't think anyone is scared of 5 Terminators.
No.
I mean, they're going to show up, they don't have a ton of firepower, they don't have a ton of survivability, like, they're very manageable. But, you know,
I don't get where you're going here.
What I'm going here is the units of Dreadnought is a game changer, because now when I'm dropping in with my 20 or 30 Terminators and just 2 or 3 big fat squads with my twin-linked assault cannons because of the Vengeful Strike, and you're just throwing out a mountain of firepower, and the fact that I can also have 3 or 6 or 9 Dreadnoughts just walking up in support is you're actually splitting that target priority. You're forcing your opponent, as a pure Deathwing army, to basically eat the shit sandwich. Do you focus on the big squadrons of 3 Dreadnoughts that are just going to be laying down a huge amount of fire, as well as like the fear of what happens when a squadron of 3 Dreadnoughts charges into combat? Because I've played my Iron Hands a lot in the last edition where One Dreadnought gets into combat, and you're just like, yeah, man, I'm going to punch one Marine to death every single fucking turn. Like, you better be prepared to remove one guy. But a Squadron of Three actually has the chance to not get bogged down. So it's just like your Squadron of Three, like, if I'm going to shoot, like, let's say three assault cannons on your Venerables, so it's just like 12 shots hitting on twos with rending, you're going to kill three, four, five guys before you charge in, then you're going to charge in, and you're going to start ripping things apart. So you have to deal with those Dreadnought units.
Let me throw a wrench in your works here.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the Deathwing Strike Force?
Oh, yeah, you do have to take one, and they have to be Venerables, isn't it?
Well, they don't have to be Venerables. It just specifically says that if you take a Venerable, it has to be in a drop pod. But otherwise, the rules for Dreadnoughts basically say that if the unit contains no additional drop pods, then it can take the dedicated transport.
Right. So I guess, yeah, you're right. There's really nothing good going on with either Deathwing or Ravenwing. But with that being said, I feel like Deathwing and Ravenwing have stolen the show for Dark Angels for a really fucking long time. Like, last Codex, like,
yeah,
you know, like you said, you know people that play Deathwing, you know people that play Ravenwing, and I do too. I know people that choose to play those individual armies. I've never met a single Dark Angels player who plays Dark Angels.
Oh, I've met quite a few.
Really?
Yeah. Chris Wyman played Dark Angels for years. There's like three or four guys at Kingsway played Dark Angels.
Sure. Wait, are we talking like when you worked there, back when Dark Angels themselves were a viable option?
I mean, yeah.
Okay, so you heard it
Listen,
here from Lang.
The veracity of my comment doesn't
10
even
years
matter.
Ago, people played Dark Angels.
They probably still have the armies. Let's just say that.
No, you're right. They probably still have the armies, but no one really plays them. And this book, again, it surprised me because, to me, for the first time in three codexes, because the last two were straight up the Deathwing Ravenwing show, Marines are the fucking star.
Yeah, Marines do come out on top, and it is really nice to see a proper Marine list that you can play around and play with and really, really enjoy. Now, again, you can still take all the Deathwing and Ravenwing units in your normal Marines, and they're going to gain all those bonuses and their Deathwing and Ravenwing bonuses. So, I mean, in general, everything still works. And I think just playing Dark Angels is the way to go. I don't like either the Deathwing or the Ravenwing Strike Force. I don't think they're worth it. I think you just play the fucking Marines.
I think
you just play the Lion's Head.
I think the Deathwing Strike Force is definitely the worst. I won't call you stupid for playing the Ravenwing Strike Force, but you're giving up the amazingness that you get out of the Demi Company, and you're giving up the ability to have the flexibility and have that tremendous all Overwatch is fired at full ballistic skill. And that's, it's just such a huge benefit because, I mean, you know, how many combat units, like Dark Eldar players have to be looking at this and just fucking cursing. Cause I mean, like when you have a shitty toughness 3, 5-up, 6-up save unit that has to charge into full ballistic skill Overwatch, you're basically losing an entire unit.
Well,
you get
puts the hurt on you. That's the same. Because again, you're charging Space Marines. You are charging the meter stick by all things that all things are measured by, you know? And I think that in general, like, this really does work. Now, people might call me crazy, but the big point that I was trying to get at was there was opportunity for more here. Because when you compare this to some of the other books, I don't know what it is about this. Maybe it's just because I hate the shit that they added so much, with the exception of like the Black Knights. but I love them, dude.
Black Knights are fucking amazing. I'm talking about Deathwing Knights.
Deathwing Knights
about
are fucking,
the fucking
terrible.
Ravenwing
right.
Dark Shroud, the Ravenwing Landspeeder Vengeance.
But Nathan, if
like,
we stand
so
beside
much...
each other, we're plus one toughness.
Woo.
Yeah. I also think that Deathwing Knights got slightly cheaper, but I think they might have got a couple of them, because they're only 45 points a model now, but they still suck. Anyways, so like I said, I felt like there was an opportunity to put more in here, and even if they had just said, you know what, okay, some of these things that Space Marines now get, we're going to say are maybe a little bit universal, like certain, some of these chapters maybe now have access to some of this stuff, but in general... I don't even think it matters that much because you do still have quite a bit of options here. And like I said, you have three separate lists that you have the opportunity to play and mix and match with and kind of make your own stuff with. And now you've got a good psychic lore that you can fuck around.
And
heads.
A chapter trait. So, I mean,
and
like,
chapter trait, like a real chapter trait.
Like you got a real chapter trait. you now have three very viable lists. Because, like, when you were playing Dark Angels with just generic Marines, you were screwing yourself because you didn't have chapter traits the way everybody else did. And there's really nothing special about you. Now there totally is, and it's fucking great. You still have three viable lists. I mean, yeah, your relics suck, but, you know, they can't all be winners.
I mean, special items have sucked for a long time now, man. Maybe it's just the fact that they haven't released a Warhammer book in years. That, like, I remember when special items were good and you wanted buy them.
Well, like, remember with, like, fucking Fantasy 8th Edition where it's just like, listen, we've decided that instead of, inundating you with 30 items, we're giving you 8 items. One is 100 points and worth every last one of those fucking points. And you're always just like, oh, shit.
God, I remember those days. Now every time I go to 40K and I look at these fucking relics, I'm always just like, oh, yes. It's a Stormbolter with an extra shot.
Whoa. This Stormbolter has 2 extra shots and shred.
Oh, my God. And it's AP4. I don't know if you noticed.
Well, that's because it's a Stormbolter. Oh, yeah. Stormbolters are normally AP5. Holy shit. You know what? I take it back.
Amazeballs.
Best relic ever. I mean, fuck the Shield Eternal. Who wants to have a Storm Shield that gives them Eternal Warrior?
All right. So, there you guys have it. That's the Dark Angels. I mean, generally, it's positive. I can't say a lot negative about it because, like I said, I still like it for the same reasons I liked the Dark Angels Codex last time. But they got better. They got access to better special rules, but they didn't get anything new, and they didn't get anything that, you know, Space Marines have now on top of it. So, yeah, unless you're a fucking shitty Blood Angels player, everyone else is better than you now. So, you
know, yes.
Saying.
So enjoy all of those Assault Marines that are no longer legal to play, man.
That's correct, man. Just get them in your force and make it happen.
And just listen to your emo music while fucking crying yourself to sleep at the fact that you are now the fucking joke.
It's okay, Blood Angels players, man. You guys can totally just use Dark Angels rules when you play Blood Angels. It's not a big deal. Nobody cares. It's fine. It's fine. Go for it. It's no big deal. Good times. Good times. You can still get assault squads, man.
You can get one in your demi company. That's all you ever needed anyway, right?
Brilliant. All right, so there you have it, Dark Angels. I don't know if there's much else to say there. I guess, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good weekly listener poll question about chapter traits because I feel like chapter traits are the things that we talk about most. Especially over the last 2 Codex releases, obviously, but, you know, now, again, as Space Marines are what everyone is compared to, what everyone's measured against.
Do you think
that
other armies should get chapter traits? There was a rumor a while back about the old Tyranid Codex, was right after the last Space Marine Codex had come out, and chapter traits were a new thing, and we were going on and raving about them, and there was a rumor that the new Tyranid book was going to have chapter traits for your 3 different hive fleets. So Behemoth, Kraken, and Leviathan, they'd all play differently. And the absence of those was one of the things that I was honestly the most disappointed with because we saw this opportunity. We saw Games Workshop choose to look at their fluff and say, you know what, but not all Space Marines are the same.
Well, that's generally fine, but I think we already...
when you really look at their fluff, let's talk about it. Orcs, are you telling me that every single orc plan plays the same? Or can you have chapter traits to differentiate the different clans so that you can add a little bit of flavor
into
them?
They used to have that back in the day.
They used to have them back in the day, man.
You know,
fucking Death Stalls.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you're
totally
playing
awesome.
Bad Moons, like they had a little bit of an extra bonus. Now, it wasn't as game affecting generally as...
The
chapter traits are, but I think that's why they moved away from it. That's why we stopped seeing Imperial Guard played as anything other than Cadia, Codex Cadia, you know?
But that's exactly it. Is like when you look at it, orcs could easily benefit from a chapter trait system. Again, I already talked about Tyranids. You just brought up Guard, and I think that Guard embody it beautifully because Cadians are Cadians, but fucking Catachan, Talarn, Tanith even. I mean, remember back in the day when there were fucking Tanith rules and the old Imperial Doctrine system that allowed you to really customize and make whatever army you want?
Like, remember Vestroians?
Oh, Vestroians. Such nice models. so much better than Valhalla's. It's so cool.
Fucking Valhalla's, dude. And nobody with any self-respect played Valhalla's. They just didn't, because it was just like, oh, so you're just the poor ones?
Right. Right. No, but like I said, so it's just like there are so many areas within their own fucking fluff and canon to implement a trait style system. And I'm always left shrugging my shoulders and saying, why aren't they? Because even when we looked at Eldar Craft Worlds, you know, in that Codex review, they still didn't introduce a fucking trait system for all the different craft worlds. So you're just like, why not?
They're
used
to back in the days when they were like supplements
Codex
for everything.
Craft worlds.
Everything's going to get a supplement. Just you wait, guys.
Yeah.
That was the days. Those were the days when they were just, everyone kept saying like, oh, don't you just wait. That Talaren supplement's coming.
Well, yeah, because they got Eanden.
Yeah.
And they released Sentinels of Terror. They released Clan Raukon. They released the fucking two different Chaos ones, Black Legion and Crimson Tide. So it's just like they were releasing
Stormtrooper supplement.
Yeah, the Stormtrooper supplement. Space Wolf's got a supplement. I can't even remember the name of it. they did.
It was something Wolf, something Claw.
Yeah, I mean,
you know.
Orcs got a supplement. So it's just like they used to always be releasing these supplements.
Chaos, Black Legion supplement.
That did allow you to do this thing and start to really kind of differentiate your army from other ones. But like I said, we're getting it in Codex Marines. Generic Codex Marines got it. Dark Angels just got it. Like, for the love of God, Games Workshop, bring this out to the rest of the factions in your game, because, I mean, first of all, you don't give a fuck about game balance anyway, okay?
Well,
I mean, Age of Sigmar doesn't even have points. This is how little you care about how people play your games, only that they buy models. So for the love of God, give me chapter traits. You're not going to break 40K by giving me guard regimental traits.
Can I internet soothsay?
Okay.
Games Workshop within the Warhammer 40,000 universe will continue to do this thing that they're doing now for the next 4 to 5 releases, and then they'll change their minds.
Well, yeah, I mean,
before finishing all of the codexes in the range and making sure that all of them are in line, they will change their minds.
We have seen them do this forever. Like, let's talk third edition.
That's
third
why I don't care. I was like, fuck, who gives a shit, man? They'll come around to it eventually.
Like, fucking third edition was everybody needs to get out of the big, you know, the big black book, as it was called. So we're just going to fucking push out the flimsiest codex as possible, because it was just giving you a codex, so you weren't using rulebook rules. And for those of you that are new to 40K, second edition 40K was a completely different system. They used D10s, D20s, all of this bullshit. So when they moved to the strict D6 system, they invalidated every single codex, and so the main rulebook had every army's rules in it.
That's right.
Except for you Necron players. Fuck you. And then they quickly tried to just pump out anything that they could. And that was kind of the third edition thing. And then once everyone had a codex, they started to replace those flimsy ass fuckers with actual meat. And this is where that Codex 3.5K, you know, the Chaos Codex came from. And ask any Chaos player that has played from them. They still long for that 3.5 Chaos Dex, because it is still the best Codex Games Workshop has ever released in their history. And I didn't even play Chaos. And even
I keep saying it, man. I fucking play. I dealt with the downfall.
Right?
I dealt with the fall of the gods, man.
But like, that's the thing is like, so they were all pushing towards that style of codexes. And then, you know, you got that in early fourth edition as well, when Space Marines got their trait system, Imperial Guard got their doctrines, and then they decided, for no fucking reason at all, when they redid orcs, that orcs were going to be fucking different.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, wait, what? And so it's just like, orcs never got that good codex. They just went from having this flimsy piece of shit to a piece of shit codex with
the new garbage.
Yeah, the new garbage.
Is basically what they got. Yeah.
And then they kept doing that. And then when Chaos Space Marines got redone, they decided, again, this is the book that we're just going to change fucking everything on. So Games Workshop always does this. You're absolutely right. They're not going to finish updating everyone for 7th edition with a codex like this before they decide what the new shiny is going to be for 8th edition. And then they're going to force you to buy a book. Because, I mean, like, let's be honest, we're already getting old in 7th edition. 6th edition was a 1-year-long edition. We're already nearing year 2. Games Workshop's writing it.
Of course
they don't give a shit about you. As soon as their sales slip, they are going to force every 40K player to buy a new $130 rulebook because they don't fucking care about you.
Well, yeah, because the last one was $100 for your mandatory catalog.
Yes.
And it's now going to be $120 for your mandatory catalog, art book, and painting guide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a luxurious slipcover.
See, my question is, do you think that they're going to give the rules out for free like they are with Age of Sigmar and
fuck
still...
No.
No, I know they won't because 40K...
Oh, my God, no.
I was just going to make... You see, you interrupted me before I could get to the... And still release a limited edition book that you can buy for exorbitant sums of money.
Dude, I'm going to internet soothsay again for you, okay? Years from now, Games Workshop will be very happy, proud, and excited to let all of its fans know that Warhammer Fantasy Battles is being relaunched. What?
Yeah, you are. You
Come
are,
on, dude. Like, everyone thinks, it's, oh, it's going away.
You
are going to see it again. Yeah, fuck, sure we are. Sure we're not.
You
sure
know, maybe,
we're not going to see those anymore.
Maybe they just never wanted to get to double-digit editions. So
no, man,
this is why you have Age of Sigmar, right. Air quotes, but we're totally going to get the relaunch of Warhammer Fantasy Battles. Again, they're BlackBerry. They have no idea why no one likes them. They have no idea why they are hemorrhaging users. So they're just trying to fucking flail around in the dark and guess it. Like, to me, this is the BlackBerry Passport, that fucking pure square of a phone,
yes,
that no one gave a shit about.
Right.
That's Age of Sigmar. Like, let's...
Even corporate businesses were like,
Right.
I worked for that when that phone came out, and everyone was just like, eh, you know, we're just going to stick with this one.
We're
going
to stick with
cares.
The old one, and if we have to upgrade our hardware because...
What about the torch? Do you guys want the torch?
No.
Right, because all of the loyal BlackBerry customers... need a touchscreen.
Right?
So yeah, that'll be the question. I mean, I think generally everyone's just going to vote yes to that because I think people like having options. I don't think there's anyone out there going like, I'll unbalance the game because everyone knows it's not balanced to begin with.
Right. I mean, how can you unbalance 40K? We've been living there since 7th. Since 6th. We've been living in unbalanced 40K since 6th edition. Who the fuck cares anymore?
Here's the question then. In an ideal world, would you rather see every single codex built around a traits system similar to Space Marines, or would you see every single codex have an appropriate number of supplements giving you the options to play those types of lists, right? So like Imperial Guard would have 6 supplements as opposed to 6 chapter traits that go in along with it. So that's the question. You can find that at jadedgamercast.com.
I can't wait for next week. I want to talk about that.
I also want to talk about that one. That's why my genius brain came up with it while you were nattering.
Dude, all I do is natter. Have you met me?
Oddly enough, I have met you.
235 episodes. Everyone knows I just natter.
So, okay. Hey, Nathan, something shiny. I was talking to you about Dice Masters.
Yes.
There's this really funny thing about Dice Masters, right? Because now I'm an adult. So the collectible card game aspect of any collectible card game makes me go, meh, fuck it. Because I don't like the whole, like, gambling aspect of yada, yada, yada. And back in the day, buying a box of cards for Magic or Overpower or whatever card game I was playing at the time was just out of the question. You'd never had the money for that shit. So just, there was the one rich kid who did it and you fucking hated him because he always had all the best cards and you couldn't beat him. But at the same time, I also remember the old days of like having an incomplete set and trying to build with what you have and trading with your friends and so on and so forth. As an adult, I don't do that anymore. I just buy a box because I'm just like, whatever. Just I get this many super rares. Perfect. But I don't ever go past that where like Maddie and Jason always buy like 2 to 3 boxes a piece so that they can get virtually the whole set. Now, the funny thing about that is, I have a lot of models in my basement,
mm-hmm.
as do you, as do the majority of listeners listening to this, I assume. And sometimes you go down there or sometimes you go look at your stash and you're just like, Jesus Christ, I spent a lot of money on this fucking shit.
Yep.
With Dice Masters, it's just buckets of dice. Like Maddie came over with like 3 small buckets of dice for like various Dice Masters games that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And like we were just dumping them on the table and I'm just like, dude, we need to build a chair out of these. Because generally, you'll never need more than 4 to 5 of each type of dice, right? Mm-hmm. But when you buy a box or when you buy multiple boxes, you end up with something along the lines of like 10 to 15 of each type of dice.
Jesus.
So what we have are just these massive boxes of multicolored dice that we will never, ever use. They're just completely wasteful, as well as a ton of cards that we'll never, ever use because we have duplicates of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because, like, yeah, I look now between that and then the Dice Masters thing, and I'm just like, I don't know, I'm kind of okay with just having buckets of dice as opposed to, like, closets of models I'll never paint. I just felt like it was a strange observation when I was playing this weekend because I was sitting there looking at these buckets of dice, and I was just like, mm-hmm. I kind of want to pour them out over my head right now. You know, like, just shower myself with them in my basement. Just watch them all hit the floor.
Make
silently
it rain,
rub one out.
Dice Masters.
That's right. And then in the silence after all the clattering, just rub one out with, like, the blinds open, curtains open or something. You know, I mean, you gotta live the dream.
Yeah, but I mean, you know that as soon as you do that, you know, you're never gonna be able to clean them all up again, and then it's gonna be like a fucking piece of Lego in the middle of the night. Like, you're just gonna be like, stumbling drunk from a podcast one day, and you're just gonna, like, fucking step on it, and that, like, then you'll just hate the game for life.
Generally, it is accepted that the cleanup period of any euphoric experience is unpleasant, but you do it. Right? Mindcock. That has been Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang.
I'm Nate.
Have a good one.
Cheers.